in the administration building at 9 a.m. after breakfast to start your orientation. Try to make it quick so you can get to your work as quickly as possible. I know you're all scientists. She stopped and looked at me. Except you. You're our new grunt. I grunted. Anyway, you all have jobs and you're all smart, so we'll rush you through it. As for tonight, she pointed down the other way, you've all been assigned to the same barracks suite, which is that way. Don't worry, your last names are on the door, keys inside, along with a fresh set of jumpsuits. You'll be fine, you're smart, you'll figure it out. But if you can't, just ask literally anyone, they'll help you. Because we're not assholes here. Well, some of us are, but even they will help you. If they don't, we'll feed them to the tiny blood-sucking insects. You saw those earlier today. Hey, did you see the frogs? We nodded. We had seen the frogs, which lived in little decorative ponds peppered around the base. Aside from being the closest things to pets that there were at Tanaka Base, they also served the purpose of eating any flying insects that managed to get inside the netting. The insects would sense the water, go in for a drink, and then frogs would get them. Natural insecticide. Also cute. Aparna, our biologist, wondered if they were from here or if they were imported from our Earth, but it was a party, so that question remained unanswered for now, and Aparna may also have now been slightly drunker than the rest of us and not in a state of mind to receive an answer. We love the frogs, McDonald said. I know you know where the community center's at because it is literally right there. She pointed to the building right by the walkway to the airfield. And you should come back tonight after you get yourself situated because it's a gold team tradition to watch movies together the first night. Tonight we're watching, wait for it, Godzilla, and then Pacific Rim because, you know, we wave to signal the world. And that's the original uncut Japanese version of Godzilla, not the bullshit American recut with Aaron Burr. Raymond Burr, I said. Oh, geez, right. McDonald tapped her head slightly. Sorry, got a whole lot of Hamilton going on up here. Also, I'm a little drunk. Any questions? We had none. McDonald dismissed us, by which I mean she waved goodbye vaguely with her drink and then wandered off. I really don't know what to make of this place, Aparna said, watching her go. I like it, Kahurangi said. He still had the uke and was plucking one of the strings absentmindedly. Let's go find our barracks suite, Neve said. I can't wait to see what it looks like. And whatever it looks like, I get the top bunk. There was no top bunk. The barracks suite with our names on it was a tiny freestanding cottage in a row of tiny freestanding cottages that stretched well down a wooden path that was clearly meant to be the residential area of the base. The suite consisted of a small common room with a couch, table with chairs, and bookshelves. A monitor was placed between the bookshelves and was currently showing a screensaver. On the bookshelves were individually labeled packages, presumably our additional jumpsuits. Two short, narrow hallways on either side of the common room revealed the individual bedrooms, each already with our names on their doors, which were wide enough for a twin bed and a small path to a wardrobe and a tiny desk with a chair. A small shelf was above the desk. A small window was above the bed. The bed included a mattress, a pillow, two sets of sheets, and pillowcases. The desk had a folder on it which said Tanaka Base Guide and Directory. On the shelf was an envelope which read New Occupant and a small plant in a tiny pot. I went into my room and walked over to the desk and picked up the envelope. Where's the kitchen? I heard Aparna say. Forget the kitchen. Where's the damn loo? Neve responded. Check the base guide, I yelled back. The what? It's in your room, I said, and then opened the envelope. There was a letter inside. Dear new occupant, it's tradition here, when we swap out our lodgings, that we leave a note and a small gift for the new occupant to welcome them and to wish them luck with their tour. This time, it's bittersweet for me, because I've decided this will be my last tour. No one else knows this yet. You're the first person I've told, besides myself. I paused at this, then kept reading. It's also bittersweet because when we leave this world behind, we leave everything about it behind. We can take nothing from it and tell no one of it. 3 years of my life, 4 tours, and all I have is the memory. It's one of the reasons I have to leave it. As wonderful as it has been, it feels like too much of my life has been unreal, imaginary. Maybe I'm the only one who feels this way, but even if it's just me, it's enough. It's time for me to go back to the real world and have a real life. I did a foolish thing this last tour. I decided my room would be nicer with some green in it and brought a cutting home and put it in a pot on my windowsill. When it came to go, I realized I couldn't take it with me. So I am leaving it to you as a gift. I hope you will care for it like I did, and that it gives you joy as it did for me. And perhaps, when you leave again in 6 months, you will give it to the next occupant of this room, who might even be the person who replaces me. Good luck and best wishes to you. Think of me from time to time. I, who am back in our other world. I will think of you, too, whoever you are, and fondly. Yours, Sylvia Braithwaite. I set the letter down, picked up the small pot with the plant, and put it back on the windowsill. Whoever had my room last left a big pile of poop fruit on my desk, Neve yelled from their room. Seriously, what the actual fuck? Chapter 8. Bryn McDonald pointed at Aparna. Okay, she said. You're the new biologist. Say it. Say what? Aparna asked. The thing that's been bothering you since the moment you saw a kaiju. We were all in a very small conference room at the administrative building, and it was just after 9 in the morning, and we were having, as promised, our orientation session. Bryn McDonald, who we last saw a little bit drunk, was emphatically not so now, and, as she promised, she remembered all our names and what we were at the base to do. We all sat at the very small wooden table, in normal-size wooden chairs, and I wondered if they had been made at the base. McDonald stood next to a bookcase. Right at the moment, she was staring at Aparna in particular, waiting on an answer. All right, fine, Aparna said. These kaiju are too big. They shouldn't exist. Because of the square cube law, McDonald prompted. For starters. Everyone up on the square cube law? McDonald asked. Nods all around. Neve and Kahurangi were scientists, and I was a nerd. We all knew that as things got bigger, their volume increased as a cube of the multiplier, while the surface area increased as a square. McDonald turned her attention back to Aparna. So the kaiju have far too much volume. Their muscles would snap, their lungs wouldn't give them enough oxygen, they couldn't feed themselves enough energy, their nervous systems would run too slowly to move them around, their bones would tear out of their bodies, and by all known physical laws, they would lie groaning in their own pile of meat until they died. They wouldn't groan, because there's no way they could inflate their lungs. But yes, I think that otherwise covers it, Aparna said. McDonald nodded, turned, pulled a massive binder from the bookshelf, and dropped it in front of Aparna with a thud. What's this? Aparna said. Your homework, McDonald said. It's a précis on all the biology of the kaiju that we understand so far. Aparna goggled at the massive binder. This is a précis? The short version, yes, McDonald said, and then looked at us other three. You don't have to read this, but you should. It's fascinating. If you don't look at it, all I ask for you to remember is that the kaiju have a biology that is utterly unlike anything we have back home. There literally is no analog. The kaiju don't break physics because you can't break physics. The square cube law applies to them just like it does to any creature. But their unique biology allows for their size and movement. Unique to us, I mean. Relatively common biology here. Tom Stevens said yesterday we shouldn't think of them as animals, that they're systems or environments, I said to McDonald. McDonald pointed to the binder. He's quoting that, she said. And good for him. I thought he just skimmed it when I gave it to him. But even that is too limiting. She pointed at me. You are a system and an environment, after all. In terms of sheer numbers, there are as many non-human cells in and on your body than there are human cells. Bacteria, fungi, protists, even tiny parasitic mites that live in your face. I could be happy never talking about tiny skin mites ever again, I said. They come out when you sleep, you know, I do now. Thanks for that. Wait until you see the kaiju parasites. They're a trip, McDonald said. My point here is that any of the metaphors that we use to understand animals or any creature back home don't quite convey what we deal with when we talk about what kaiju are. Give us an example, Neve said. McDonald squinted at Neve. Physics, right? Physics and astronomy, yeah. McDonald hefted another binder out of the bookshelf and thudded it down in front of Neve. Kaiju get their energy from nuclear reactors. Neve stared at the massive binder and then back up at McDonald. Excuse me, what? Nuclear reactors, McDonald said. Where do they get a nuclear reactor? They grow them. The actual fuck they do that? Aparna pushed her biology binder over to Neve. You're gonna want this one, she said. McDonald pushed the binder back to Aparna and then turned her attention back to Neve. How do you grow a brain? Or if you're someone of the uterus-bearing persuasion, an entire other human being. There's a difference, Neve said. Is there? You're saying they evolved to grow nuclear reactors, Kahurangi said to McDonald. We think so, yes. Not to repeat what Neve said, but how does that even make sense? What's the fossil record on that? Do we have any evidence of proto-kaiju with intermediary structures that somehow lead to fully functioning nuclear reactors? Ah, the geologist. McDonald turned back to the bookshelf. Ah, shit, Kahurangi said, anticipating another thuddingly large binder, but the one McDonald pulled out this time was thin enough that she was able to simply hand it to him. Kahurangi took it in and appeared almost disappointed in its size. That's it? He said. Really? McDonald nodded. Unlike these two, she motioned at Aparna and Neve, you have less prior work on the geology and paleontology fronts because, as a practical matter, it's more difficult to do site work. Ah, Kahurangi said. And why is that? A proportionally higher chance of being killed and eaten. Yes, I can see how that would put a damper on research. The last Gold Team geologist decided to retire after we basically had to reattach a limb for a second time. Oh. Well, that's not completely accurate. It wasn't the same limb twice. They were different limbs. I had not been informed of this, Kahurangi said. There's a reason Tanaka base is in the trees, McDonald said. The jungle floor is not very friendly. Which reminds me, which of you have had weapons training? We all stared blankly. McDonald said, and appeared to make a mental note. She turned her attention back to Kahurangi. To answer your question briefly, we don't have much evidence of intermediary structures because we've been limited in what we can do and how we can research. You have a lot of ground you can break here, literally. As long as I don't get eaten. Got it, Kahurangi said. We can say that in general. The evolution of life here is wildly different because of differing factors that are represented in the geological samples we do have. Because some initial conditions were different, life here evolved very differently. How differently? Aparna asked. We're the only mammals on this planet, for one thing, McDonald said. They otherwise didn't evolve at all. Same with birds. There are reptiles here, but they're not as successful as a biological class as they are back home. We have analogs here for each, of course, and life evolves to fill niches, but they're not the same biologically. You have frogs, though, I pointed out. Yes, not the same species of frogs as back home, but frogs and other amphibians. Lots of fish, insects, and invertebrates. So whatever happened differently here happened around the time amphibians and reptiles branched off. McDonald pointed to the thin binder. Well, you tell us, she said. But it's worth noting that it's not that simple. We have flowering plants here, for example. As far as we can tell, they evolved almost exactly like they do at home. It's complicated. It always is, Kahurangi said. Which reminds me, your chemistry, too, McDonald said, and heaved a huge binder toward Kahurangi before he could react. There's a lot more there. Evidently, Kahurangi stared at the new binder. One big difference here is that there is a relatively higher percentage of actinides present on this version of Earth than ours, which includes uranium and thorium. They are taken up and used by the life forms here in a way they're not back home. something clicked in my brain. So everything here refines uranium, and the kaiju evolved to use it. That's nuts, Neve said. That's evolution, Aparna corrected. Maybe, Kahurangi amended. McDonald squinted at me. You're our new grunt. I lift things, I agreed. McDonald nodded, turned, and got out the biggest binder of all. Starting with that, apparently, I said. Tanaka base systems and operations, McDonald said. No fair you not getting homework, too. This is actually kind of fascinating, I said to the rest of the newbies at lunch as I flipped through my binder. You really are a nerd, Kahurangi said. We sat together in the base dining hall. It was formally serving lunch, one of the four meals that were put together by staff, but it also featured an open area for grazing at all times and a couple of kitchenettes that anyone who wanted to could use. Don't listen to him, Neve said. Live your truth. Go on, tell us something fascinating about this place. We make fuel and plastic out of thin air, I said. How do we do that? Aparna asked. You all saw that refinery-looking thing by the airfield? They nodded. That's where they do it. They suck carbon dioxide and water vapor out of the air and then catalyze it. Depending on the process, you get plastics or fuel. Great, we're polluting a second Earth, Neve said. If we're pulling it out of the air, it's carbon neutral, Kahurangi pointed out. I'll remember you said that next time you're sucking on exhaust fumes. What uses fuel or plastic here anyway? Aparna asked. She held up her wooden chopsticks and then tapped them on her wooden bowl. I don't see much of it, and I was told this base runs mostly on solar and wind. The airships use the fuel, mostly. The plastic gets used to repair things we bring over, like laptops and tablets, and for some other things. I pointed to the netting that encased the whole of the base. That stuff. I picked at our suits. This stuff, too. Yeah, what's the deal with the jumpsuits? Kahurangi said. I feel like we're being dressed by someone who watched way too many science fiction movies from the 70s. I flipped through the binder. So, they keep the critters out, for one. They're also designed to encourage evaporation of body sweat in hot and humid conditions, like this planet, all the damn time. That's not a joke, Aparna said. I feel like I'm swimming. You feel like you're swimming? I feel like I'm stinking, Neve said, slapping their jumpsuit. These things make me want to take a shower every 15 minutes. Which reminds me, why do they make us walk to a common lavatory to shower and shit? Why don't we have those in our cottages? I flipped to the section about the showers. Ease of plumbing, mostly, I said. That's bullshit, I protest. Please don't poop in our cottage, Aparna said. I will not, Neve said. But you know I'm right. Ease of plumbing and also to help with collection of human waste, I continued, which, when sterilized and treated, is used for various light manufacturing purposes and to fertilize the crops we eat. We all stopped and looked at our food. Well, that's just great, Neve said. Everything gets recycled there, I said. And everything we can't recycle gets shipped back to human Earth. We're meant to have zero ecological impact. What about meat? Kahurangi said, spearing something that looked meaty on his plate. Is this, like, actually beef? Probably, I said a minute later after checking. We have some aquaculture tanks for various arthropods and fish stocks, and we bring in some foods we can't easily grow here. Anything meat, dairy, or grain-based, sugar and some spices, coffee and tea. Most of the runs that the Shobijin makes are for supplies. Food, medical supplies, technology. That sounds expensive, Kahurangi said, swallowing his probably meat. From what I can see, everything here is expensive, I said. Or would be if we had to consider what everything cost, which apparently we don't have too much. It's a socialist paradise, Neve crowed. It might be easier just to bring along a few chickens, is my point, Kahurangi said. Aparna shook her head at this. They don't want to run the risk of introducing foreign species here any more than they have to. Kahurangi smirked at this. I think if a chicken tried to escape here, it wouldn't last very long. It's not just the chicken. It's everything that comes with the chicken, Aparna said. Microbes, parasites, viruses. Life here is different, but it's probably not all that different. Well, not on the smaller end of things. And the creatures here don't have any defenses against anything a chicken might carry. A bird flu? could wipe them all out. She turned to me. I'm guessing the greenhouses are the most biologically secure buildings on the base. I flipped to the greenhouse section. You would be correct, I said. Airlocks and heavy air and water filtration and hand pollination. Someone's job here is to swab flowers, Neve said. Actually, I said, and flipped to another page and held it up. It's most people's job at some point. Everyone here has one or two primary roles that they do, but there are only 150 of us at the base and a lot of jobs that need doing. So, in addition to your full-time job, every day everyone gets chores that have to be completed and reported in as done. I pulled out my phone, which was connected to the local Wi-Fi. There's an app. Enjoy your swabbing, Aparna said to Neve, who threw a crouton at her. What about the kaiju? Kahurangi asked. What about them? I mean, look, Kahurangi said. We're in a place where monsters roam free, and things that humans have never experienced wait for us. And so far, all we're doing is wearing plastic pants, catching up on required reading, he tapped his two binders, and being told we'll be doing menial tasks. So you're asking when you get to play with the kaiju, I said. I wouldn't put it that way, but yes. Your predecessor played with the kaiju and had a limb ripped off twice, Neve reminded him. Two limbs ripped off once, Aparna amended. Either way, not exactly a fun time on Planet Kaiju. I'm not saying I want to walk up to one and announce that I'm on the buffet, Kahurangi said. But the name of the organization is the Kaiju Preservation Society. When do we get to preserve some kaiju? As it turned out, the answer to that was the very next day. Chapter 9. Oh, there you are. Tom said to me as I came into the dining hall. I had stopped by the dining hall to get something cold to drink. He was coming out with a mug of something hot, most likely coffee. Here I am, I agreed. I motioned to his coffee. How can you drink that? It's coffee, he said, and it's 10 a.m. and yet my brain still needs to wake up. It's like 90 degrees. 30 degrees, Tom corrected. We're metric here. It's hot, is my point. You get used to it after the first couple of tours. I hardly notice it anymore. I stood there, sweating in my jumpsuit, overloading its ability to wick away my sweat. That must be nice. It'll happen to you, Tom promised. How's the first workday? I'm lifting things, I said. I had woken up and checked the base app and discovered that I was a very, very popular person. My task queue had 15 items on it. Mostly involving moving things, lifting things, and couriering things from one place to the next. Tanaka Base was not as vast as the Lower East Side, but I was getting a workout regardless. I'm vaguely resentful that Food Mood gave me more relevant experience for this world than a full decade of higher education did. It's funny about that. Listen, I just put a priority task in your queue. Chem Lab has some canisters it needs to get down to the helipad, which means you will meet Martin, our copter pilot. That should be fun. He's a kick. There was a light notification ping on my phone as Tom said this. That's probably the notification right now. Is it such a priority that I can't get something to drink? Not at all. Always hydrate. Then go to the Chem Lab. Enjoy your beverage. He tipped his mug full of queasily hot liquid at me and headed off. I went to the dining hall and perused my choices. There was water, tea, coffee, juice that looked like orange juice, but I don't know, it could have been poop fruit or something. There was also a soda fountain, but our in-room base guides had warned us to be moderate with its use because otherwise the syrups would run out fast. The guide suggested no more than 1 8-ounce glass of the colored sugar water a day. I decided to do without. There was no need to import my crippling diet soda addiction to a brand new world, and besides, the fountain was Pepsi products anyway. New planet, new life. I downed two large glasses of water and checked the base app. Tom's priority task was indeed there, along with a long list of other tasks I was requested for, which was being added to by the minute. To be fair, I wasn't the only one working the queue. There was also my blue team counterpart, Val, who looked like she could bench press me and not break a sweat. I met her earlier in the day because hauling a compost canister from sewage and recycling to Greenhouse C was a two-person job. unless you wanted compost to break loose and roll all the way through the base, which we emphatically did not. I checked off Tom's task in my queue, signaling to Val that I was taking that task and alerting the chem lab that I was on my way. Then I bust my glass and walked across the base to my destination, picking up a transport cart at maintenance along the way. Kaharangi was there with his blue team counterpart, Dr. Pham Bien. "I found out what we use chemistry for on Kaiju Earth," he said. "Meth," I said. "Even better."
"What could possibly be better than meth?" I asked, amazed.
"Pheromones," Dr. Pham said, and wrapped a large, pressurized canister, which I suspected I was there to retrieve. "Not just any pheromones," Kaharangi added. "Kaiju pheromones."
"Wow," I said. "Okay, cool. And we do this why?"
"To get them to do what we want them to do," Dr. Pham said. "You can't just talk to one. So we make these to get our point across. Like, danger here, or this is claimed territory." "And they listen?"
"Sometimes."
"I'd be worried about that qualification." "You have to work with what you have," Dr. Pham said.
"I suppose you do."
I pointed to the canister. "And what do these pheromones say?"
"These say, let's get it on," Kaharangi said. I considered this kaiju booty call in a canister. Kaharangi grinned. "Cool, right? It's nice to see you've been keeping busy on your first day of work."
"Nah, Dr. Pham has had these brewing for a while. I get to work on the next set, though."
"You must be very excited."
"You mock me, but I am," Kaharangi said. "Dr. Lautagata has been very enthusiastic about our work this morning," Dr. Pham said. It took me a moment to realize that she was referring to Kaharangi. In the 3 days that I had known him, I never learned his surname, or apparently that he had a doctorate.
"I mean, who wouldn't be?"
I replied. "So how many canisters am I picking up?" Dr. Pham pointed. "These four," she said. "And you'll have some others to pick up from Martin, but there's no rush on those. We won't need them immediately. Dr. Lautagata will accompany you."
"Good," I said. "Then maybe Dr. Lautagata will help me get the canisters on the cart, too."
Kaharangi grinned again and started lifting.
"These the baby makers?" Martin Sati asked, pointing to the canisters. He sounded like he might originally be from Quebec, which meant that, strictly speaking, he was closer to home than any of us.
"They are," Kaharangi said. He swatted at the tiny flies, trying valiantly to eat his face, only to be frustrated by the netting. The three of us were standing on one of Tanaka Base's helipads, on which a helicopter appeared at the ready. Sati grunted at this and headed to the hangar by the helipad, then stopped and looked at the two of us.
"Well, come on," he said. "Let's get this put together."
We both looked at the helicopter, confused.
"Pardon?"
Kaharangi said. "Do you think I'm going to fly up to a kaiju, roll down a window, and throw a canister at it?" Sati said.
"No, I am not.
Come, help me set up the scaffold."
He started walking again.
Kaharangi and I looked at each other, shrugged, and followed Sati into the hangar. The scaffold in question was a carbon fiber structure that passed through the helicopter's cargo hold behind its main cabin. We put it on the helicopter while Sati secured it and then showed us how to attach the canisters, first to the scaffolding and then to an apparatus that would release the contents of the canisters. The helicopter now looked like a crop duster.
"You want to stand back now," Sati said to us.
We did as he said and stood back. Sati went into the main cabin and quickly flipped the toggle switch and just as quickly flipped it back. The tiniest bit of the kaiju pheromone spritzed out.
"Oh, holy Jesus," I said.
Kaharangi groaned and turned away, covering his face. Sati laughed.
"Like it?"
Not really. "Describe the smell to me."
"Are you serious right now?"
"Yes, I want to know."
"It's like a family of raccoons hotboxed themselves to death in a dumpster, and someone distilled their fermented remains."
"Huh," Sati said.
"I usually just say it smells like malort, but I like your version, too."
He motioned to us.
"Okay, then, get in."
"What?"
I said.
Sati stared at us. "Which one of you is Dr. Lautagata?" Kaharangi raised his hand.
"So you need to come observe and report back to Dr. Pham."
"Report back what?"
"How well your perfume works," Sati said.
"And you," he pointed at me,
You have to spray the stuff when I tell you.
You can't do it yourself, I asked. It's just a toggle.
You ever fly a helicopter around an aroused and amorous kaiju?
I have not, I admitted.
Okay, then. He looked at the two of us. Either of you been in a helicopter before?
I have, Kahurangi said.
How did it go?
I threw up.
Sati motioned to the rear of the main cabin. You sit in the back.
I realize I should have asked this before I got into the helicopter, I said over the headset Sati gave me, but why are we doing this?
You mean why are we traveling 100 clicks to spray a monster with horny juice? He said.
Yes, that. Well, you know how back in the other place we have pandas?
I have heard of them, yes, I said, and reflected on how quickly the place I had lived all of my life up to 3 days ago was now the other place.
Pandas are cute, but they're not what you would call rocket scientists, and sometimes they forget how to breed, you know? So humans have to help them make a love connection. Well, kaiju are the biggest, stupidest pandas you'll ever meet.
Kaiju forget how to have sex? Kahurangi said.
They forget a lot of things, I'm going to tell you, Sati said.
They're the top of the evolutionary ladder here, but evolution definitely didn't select for brains on this planet. Everything here is dim as a rock. The gentleman we're calling on today is even less smart than your average kaiju. There's a lady of his species, one valley over from him, has been trying to make his acquaintance for the last year. Every time she comes over, he tries to fight her. So, we're here to change his mind.
Okay, but why do we care, I asked.
Why do we care about the pandas?
Because they're cute, Kahurangi said. Literally, that's why.
You're not wrong, but the answer I was thinking about is that they're endangered.
Well, so are Edward and Bella.
Edward and Bella? I said. You named these kaiju after friggin' Twilight?
I didn't, Sati said.
If it were up to me, I would have named them Sid and Nancy. Fits their personalities better. But no one asked me. One of you millennials did it.
Millennials ruining kaiju naming, I said to Kahurangi.
We're just the worst, he confirmed.
Ed and Bell are the only two of their species on this part of the continent. We don't usually see them north of 40 degrees latitude, and we don't see too many of them below that as it is. So we want to see if we can get them to make more of each other. We're the Kaiju Preservation Society. We're going to try to preserve some kaiju.
And how is that going so far? Kahurangi asked.
Not great! This is try number 5.
Sati jerked his head back toward the canisters. Dr. Pham's been tweaking the formula as we've gone along. That's why you're here, Dr. Laptagata. You get to tell her how Ed reacts to this version.
How did he react the first 4 times?
Various sorts of pissed off, mostly.
That's not good.
It's not, but I'm a good pilot. The helicopter usually doesn't take any damage.
Usually, Kahurangi said, looking at me deadpan as he did so.
The last version was almost there.
Doc said she definitely saw evidence of a tumescent cloaca.
I laughed.
Was got you chuckling, Sati said.
I was just thinking that Edward's tumescent cloaca would have been an excellent band name.
Emo, obviously, Kahurangi said.
Their first album glistened with promise, but their follow-up was a little flaccid. Their third album was really shitty.
To be fair, the competition was stiff that year.
I just thought that they should have showed more spunk.
I was going to add more to this terrible, disgraceful conversation. But then we crested a hill, and I got my first look at Edward.
Holy shit, I said.
Sati grinned. Cute like a panda, right?
Kahurangi made a noise at this.
Mate, if you think that's cute, you've been on this planet too long.
Seconded, I said.
That thing looks like H.P. Lovecraft's panic attack.
Sati nodded. Wait till you see his cloaca.
We're not actually going to see his cloaca, are we?
Kahurangi asked.
Dr. Laptagata, by the time we're done, there's not much of Edward we won't see.
How close are we going to get? I asked.
Pretty close.
Is that absolutely necessary? Kahurangi asked.
Did you put missiles on my helicopter? Sati asked him.
Filled with pheromones?
No.
Then it's absolutely necessary.
Don't worry, Doctor. Getting up close to him is the easy part. It's the getting away that's going to be the trick.
Chapter 10. Why isn't he eating us? I asked.
We were now close enough to Edward that this was not an entirely irrelevant question.
"He's asleep," Satie said.
I glanced over at him.
"Asleep?"
"They sleep, yep."
"How can you tell when he's asleep?"
"He's not eating us, for one," Satie said. "You can't see his eyes, for another." I looked out at Edward. "He has... eyes?"
"We call them eyes. I'm sure by now someone explained to you how he saw more complicated than that. Trust me, you'll know them when you see them.
No real eyes, but actual cloaca," Kahurangi said from the back.
"I don't design them. I just fly to them," Satie replied.
"Well, let's douse this thing with pheromones and go," I said. I kept looking at Edward not being awake, and was reasonably certain awake would be a bowel-loosening state.
Satie shook his head.
"Not how it works. We spray now, he'll just sleep through them. Then Dr. Lautagatta will have nothing to report, and Dr. Pham will be angry with you."
"I'm willing to lie," Kahurangi said.
"Today's your first day on the job, so I'll tell you something you don't know, which is you don't cross Dr. Pham," Satie said.
"She will come for you in the night, son. This is a tip I am giving you for free."
"She seems pretty nice." "She is nice. Wonderful person. And also, if you lie to her about these pheromones, she will gut you and leave you for the tree crabs."
"There are tree crabs?" Kahurangi asked.
Satie ignored this. "We have to wake him up," he said to me.
"And how do we do that?" I asked.
Satie moved the helicopter closer to Edward. Much closer.
"Whoa, whoa, whoa," Kahurangi said.
"I'm with him," I added.
"Getting this close is usually enough to get his attention," Satie said.
"You've done this before."
"Sure."
"And you think this is wise?"
I gestured to us being mere meters away from a fleshy wall of kaiju.
Satie snorted. "If we were wise, we wouldn't be on this planet."
"Hey, what are those?"
Kahurangi pointed at the wall of kaiju flesh. I followed his finger to a spot on Edward where things were, for lack of a better word, squirming.
"Parasites," Satie said. "The size of Rottweilers. If we stick around, you'll see larger."
"I think I've already cast my vote on sticking around."
"It doesn't look like he's waking up," I said to Satie.
"Edward's parasites might be moving about, but he was not."
Satie grimaced. "Okay, well, I have one more trick up the sleeve."
He took us vertically up the wall that was Edward until we were hovering over the top of him. There was enough room on the top to land if we wanted to. I hoped that we did not want to.
"You ready with that switch?" Satie asked me.
I grabbed it.
"Ready."
"Okay, I'm going to do a thing, and then I'm going to count to three. When I get to three, you flip it on and count to five, then switch it off."
"We're not going to just let it run? Why would we do that?"
"Look, Martin," I said, "I don't know why I need to remind you of this, but this is literally my first time doing this, and I know nothing."
"A five count is going to work just fine," Satie said. "We'll cover the rest after. Ready?"
"For what?" I asked. "This," he said, and brought the copter down hard on top of Edward. Edward squished like a pudding with a hard crust on it. Satie hovered the copter a couple of meters above where he just poked Edward. The area that Satie had just bounced off started to glow.
"One,"
Satie said. The glow suddenly focused itself into an intensely bright 3-meter circle.
I think I found the eye," I said.
"Two," Satie said, and then jammed the copter back down into the heavily illuminated surface. Edward roared.
"Tree,"
Satie said, and drove us straight up. I flipped the switch and started to count, watching the eye as I did so. It took until 4 before we started gaining altitude relative to it. Edward had been chasing us up the whole way.
"Off!" I yelled at Satie.
He yanked us over and away from Edward, who narrowly missed swatting us with, well, whatever it is you wanted to call what he was swatting us with, since tentacle seemed too limited at the moment.
"Can you still see him?" Satie asked.
Both I and Kahurangi said yes.
"Watch his eyes!"
"What are we looking for?" Kahurangi said. Edward stopped roaring. There were 4 wide disks of light we took for his eyes. We stared at them. They suddenly contracted. The new sun-like pinpoints focused on us.
"Oh, shit," Kahurangi said. And then, equally suddenly, there were wings. "Oh, shit!" Kahurangi repeated. "There are fucking wings on this thing?" I yelled incredulously. "There sure are," Sati said. "There were no wings a minute ago." "They were there," Sati said. "You were just looking for eyes." Edward heaved into the air. "Oh shit, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit," Kahurangi said. "We should go," I said to Sati. Sati wheeled the helicopter around and started to fly away from Edward.
"Okay, so right now there's good news and some potentially not great news," Sati said.
He reached over with his left hand and clicked a button, which turned on a monitor showing us the view from the rear camera. It was, at the moment, mostly filled with Edward.
The head bounce pissed him off, and he was probably going to kill us, but then he got a whiff of those pheromones, and now he doesn't want to kill us anymore.
"Are you sure?" Kahurangi said. "Eyes dilated, right?"
We nodded.
"That's your sign. If he doesn't want to kill us now, why is he chasing us?"
"Because he wants to do something else to us instead."
"We're gonna get fucked by a kaiju?" Kahurangi yelled, processing the implication.
"That's the good news."
"How is this good news?"
"It's good news because as long as he wants to mate with us, he doesn't want to kill us," Sati said.
He dipped the helicopter down, flying it dangerously close to the canopy of trees below. Edward was momentarily confused, but then trimmed to match.
"Which means he'll chase us, but won't attack us. We want him to chase us because we're leading him to Bella.
And when he sees Bella, he'll go for her instead of us," I said.
"We'll see. That's the plan."
"What's the less great news?"
"The pheromones wear off. Quickly. We have to keep dosing him until we get to Bella."
I considered this.
"So we have to keep close enough to him to hit him with more pheromones?"
"Yes."
"Because if we don't, he'll want to kill us, in which case we're dead."
"Yes."
"But if we do and we're sloppy, then he'll grab us and try to fuck the helicopter, in which case we're dead."
"Yes."
"And you do this all the time."
"Yes," Sati said.
"Sort of. This is as far as we've ever gotten."
"Wow, he's close," Kahurangi said, pointing at the monitor.
"Dose him again," Sati said to me. "Count to five."
I flipped the toggle switch and did a five count. Edward took the spray straight in the maw, seemed to choke and sputter in the monitor, and then disappeared.
"The hell?"
Kahurangi said. I said, looking around through the helicopter windows.
"He does that," Sati observed.
"Disappear?"
"Yeah."
"He's a 150-meter-tall nightmare. How the fuck does he disappear?" Kahurangi yelled.
"Well," Sati said, and then Edward dive-bombed us from above, setting himself directly in our path, appendages grasping toward us.
We all screamed, and Sati did a thing, and our helicopter did another thing, and somehow we got past Edward, but not before I saw an image I would take to my grave. Edward's tumescent cloaca. After I gathered myself, I looked back at Kahurangi, who was mouth agape, eyes unblinking.
"You saw it too," I said.
Kahurangi nodded. "I'm going to need to get seriously shit-faced when we get back. I'll be joining you."
"Jesus, Jamie, what is wrong with this planet?"
"He's back on our tail," Sati said to me. "Hit him again."
"You sure about that?"
I asked.
"If he wasn't hopped up on that stuff, we'd already be at the debris field on the jungle floor," Sati said.
"So, yeah, I'm sure. Make it 6 seconds this time." We hit Edward with three more blasts before we got to the Valley of Bella. She was awake, had her wings out, and, if possible, was even more objectively terrifying than Edward.
"It's like she knew we were coming," I said.
"She did," Sati said. "She has ears. Sort of."
"We can go now, right?"
Kahurangi said.
Sati shook his head. "One more thing to do."
I looked at Bella. "Let me guess," I said. "If he's following the pheromones, they have to lead to her," Sati said.
"And how does she feel about us?"
"She's been off her Edward for a while now. Let's hope she keeps her eyes on the prize."
Sati goosed the helicopter forward.
We went at Bella, straight on, Edward right behind us. Bella stood her ground.
"This could be a very bad sandwich scenario," Kahurangi said.
"Let the canisters run," Sati said to me, "just to make sure they're off the instant we clear her." I nodded and flipped the canisters on. I could see what he planned to do.
"Very bad," Kahurangi said. Very, 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 very bad.
Edward started screaming.
Bella started screaming back.
We joined in for what good it would do, and Satie wrenched us over what passed for Bella's shoulder. I flipped off the canisters as we passed over her, and then there was an explosion of earth and kaiju as Edward smashed into Bella, and the two of them rolled into the ground, snapping trees like popsicle sticks as they did so. We dodged clods of earth the size of Mini Coopers and climbed into the sky. When we were high and far enough away, Satie turned to us so we could get a look at the aftermath of our mission.
So, that's a sight, Kahurangi said. I'm going to have a hell of a time trying to describe that to Dr. Pham.
Don't worry, I had cameras running the whole time, Satie said.
What?
Kahurangi stared at Satie.
I thought you said you needed me to report back.
I never said I wasn't running video.
I could have stayed at Tanaka!
Satie motioned at the copulating kaiju.
You would have missed this.
We almost died!
Nah, Satie said. I'm good at my job.
Kahurangi stared some more and then took off his headset, signaling he was done speaking to Satie, at least for a while.
He'll get over it, Satie said to me.
Do we need to be here for this? I asked.
Are you kidding? This is pure science.
It feels like Kaiju Pornhub.
This is the first time we're seeing this species mate, Satie said.
If I weren't getting footage of this, every biologist in the KPS would hunt me down.
No, we'll stay for a while longer if that's all right with you.
I mean, I feel like we should flee while the fleeing is good, I said. When they're done, they might both want a snack.
Satie considered this for a moment.
You know what? I think we've had enough science for one day, he said,
and started to wheel us around to home.
As he did so, the radio sparked to life.
Tanaka Chopper 2, come in, someone said from base. It sounded to me like it could be McDonald, but I wasn't sure.
This is Tanaka Chopper 2. Go ahead, Satie said.
Chopper 2, we need you to check out an untagged kaiju 40 clicks southwest of your location, base said.
Satie glanced at his instruments. Apparently, being chased by a kaiju will take a lot out of a helicopter.
Base, what's the nature of the issue? He asked. Is this a spot and identify?
Negative, Chopper 2. We think we have a venting issue.
Satie paused.
Say again, base.
We think we have a venting issue, Chopper 2. Request visual confirmation and estimate of severity. Acknowledge.
Acknowledged. Heading out. Over.
He turned to me.
Well, shit, he said.
Is this a problem? I asked.
Let's hope not, Satie said, turned to Kahurangi and motioned for him to put his headset back on.
What is it? Kahurangi asked.
We just got another mission. Emergency, we have to head southwest 40 clicks.
Kahurangi frowned at this. Are we likely to get killed on this one, too?
Maybe.
Maybe?
I could let you out here if you want, Satie said. You could walk back.
Kahurangi rolled his eyes and took off his headset again.
Satie looked at me and smiled. He'll get over it, he said, and set us on our way.
Chapter 11. We spotted the smoke before we spotted the kaiju itself. The smoke curled into the sky and hung in thick and listless air. There was more than one area offering up smoke. Dark smudges traced a path toward the creature, and we followed it.
Do they usually set things on fire? I asked.
Satie shook his head.
Then why is this one doing it?
It can't help it, he said.
There it is, Kahurangi said as we came around a hill.
He put his headset back on as we traveled. He was pointing to the edge of a largish lake. The creature stood there, motionless, looking, for all the world, like it was trying to catch its breath. Behind it, things burned.
Satie maneuvered the copter out of the path of the smoke, and we hung motionless in the sky about a kilometer away from the kaiju.
We're not getting closer? I asked.
Not if we can help it, no, Satie said.
Kahurangi snorted.
That's new.
That is new, I agreed.
Why are we holding back this time?
We're here to see if it's venting, Satie said.
If it's venting, we don't want to be anywhere near it.
What's venting? Kahurangi asked. Satie didn't answer directly. Instead, he looked down at my wrist, which had a smartwatch on it. That thing have a stopwatch on it? Sure, my smartwatch had multiple functions, about 90% of which I, like most people, never used. The stopwatch was one of them. Get it ready. Satie looked back at Kahurangi and motioned with his head to a console in between my seat and his. There's a small set of field glasses in there. Get them out and use them. Kahurangi nodded. Stopwatch is up, I said. What am I using it for? Satie motioned with his head to the kaiju. The next time that thing vents, start the timer as soon as it stops, until the next time it vents again. And this venting will be obvious? The kaiju split its head open and a blinding stream of light came out of it and hit the surface of the lake, vaporizing it instantly. Pretty obvious, yeah, Satie said. The stream of light stopped and I started the timer. That thing has fire breath, I said. Satie shook his head. It's weirder than that. It's an ionized stream of particles, a plasma. It's several thousand degrees Celsius. I can see why you didn't want to get close to it. If a stream of plasma interacted with the helicopter, it would be a bad day for it and for us. How does the kaiju survive that sort of heat? Kahurangi asked. He had the field glasses out and was training them on the kaiju. If they keep it up, they don't, Satie said. Hey, I know this kaiju, Kahurangi said. I remember this thing. It's the one that fought Kevin. You sure? I asked. He handed me the field glasses. Check for yourself. I took the glasses and trained them on the kaiju. I didn't remember the face, but I did remember a chunk of kaiju flying into the air during the fight. This kaiju had an impressive chunk of it missing in its midsection. That's the one, all right, I said, and handed the glasses back to Kahurangi. It covered a lot of ground between then and now. It got its ass kicked and hasn't stopped running since. Kahurangi put the glasses back up to his face. You saw this thing get in a fight? Satie asked us. Yeah, Kahurangi said. We were almost in the middle of it. We had trees flung at us. And this one was injured? We saw chunks come off. Big ones. Why? Because... Satie stopped because the kaiju let out another stream of plasma. This one traced up the edge of the lake, making trees burst as it did so. I stopped the timer. Satie looked at me. How much time? I glanced down. 2 minutes, 8.38 seconds, I said. Okay, this is weird and gross, Kahurangi said. Things are dropping off the kaiju. Like what? Satie asked. I don't know, it looks like dandruff the size of small animals? Kahurangi looked around the glasses at Satie. Are those its parasites? Most likely, Satie said. So why are they falling off the kaiju? For the same reason rats leave a sinking ship. Satie opened up a line back to base. Base, this is Chopper 2. Chopper 2, go ahead. Spotted untagged kaiju. Can visually confirm venting. Kaiju is currently at a 2-minute interval and parasites are abandoning. Over. Acknowledged, Chopper 2. Recommend RLH protocol. Acknowledged, base. Initiating RLH protocol. Satie switched off. He glanced at Kahurangi. You can put those glasses away now. What's the RLH protocol? I asked.